Croeso. Hello and welcome to the latest episode of the CC4 Museum of Welsh Cricket Podcasts. First this week, I wanted to wish all our Muslim listeners and indeed all the Muslim cricketers of Wales a belated Eid Mubarak. Secondly, I couldn't let the opportunity go by of congratulating Glamorgan's Sam Northeast on his phenomenal innings at Lord's last weekend that saw him record the highest ever first-class innings at the home of cricket. 335 not out places him above all the greats of the game, going back as far as W.G. Grace. We're very proud of Sam's achievement in Wales, and I'll do my best to bring you that story in an episode of the podcast soon. Now to this week's guest, Anna Harris. She's been making her own little bit of history as her umpiring career has been developing. I met her at the Princess of Wales Hospital in Bridgend, where she is a medical student. I hope you enjoy the chat. Would you like to begin by telling us a little bit about your early life? Where you're born and brought up?
Happy to. So I was born in High Wycombe in Buckinghamshire, grew up in Amersham, same county. Went around a little bit for school, so I did my secondary schooling in Brighton and played for Sussex a bit there, and now I've wound up finding myself in Wales. So I started playing cricket from quite a young age, not really because anyone in the family played it, it was just more a sort of fortuitous thing, and stuck with me now, so I've been playing for 19 years and umpiring for about 8, I think.
Tell us the story about how you started playing cricket.
Yeah, so from what I remember from my 5-year-old brain, there was a rainy day at school, and instead of going out and doing PE outside, we went indoors to the sports hall, and they had some cricket equipment, all the plastic bats, and that was it. I fell in love, went home to my mum that evening and said, I want to play cricket. And she signed me up to my local cricket club, which was Chesham. And that's it, really. It took off from there.
And tell us a little bit about how your cricket developed through those early years, the junior years, and into sort of your teenage years.
Yeah, so I've got really fond memories of the Chesham under-sixes, which is amazing looking back on that, and some of the coaching that I had there. And I think I made my county debut age 9 for Buckinghamshire under-13s. I remember travelling down, it was to the Isle of Wight and then Hampshire on the way back, and sort of just developed through my youth, through Buckinghamshire cricket, and a lot of work done by the volunteers there. Tina Turner was not the singer, the cricket coach, she was one of my main role models and coaches and really inspired my love for the game. And then through the county cricket, obviously when I moved down to Brighton, I started playing for Sussex and got picked up by England under-15s. So I was on that programme for about a year and played a development game against the Netherlands. And then I broke my finger in the England under-19 week and sort of just dropped off and took a few years out of the game for personal reasons and came back and joined Berkshire and then ended up at Wales when I moved for university. So yeah, a lot of that I would have put down to my recreational coaches through club and really... really grateful to everyone at Bucks and Chesham and Chiltern Girls, as they were then, for helping me grow into the cricketer that I became.
You were a batter?
Yeah, predominant batter. I used to open the batting and leg spin bowler. I actually started out as a seam bowler, but then our squad basically needed a spinner. We had an off spinner. Then I hurt my shoulder, so we just kind of fell into leg spin. But now
you
I don't really have the control.
Pretty difficult thing to fall into.
Yeah, it was... it's a good way of getting your name on the team sheet, really, when I was that age. But when you start turning it and turning it big, it's just something you really enjoy, something a bit different. So it sort of became an all-rounder, but as I've sort of moved on, I've probably become more of a batter.
And some of the highlights you remember from those years growing up? I mean, some innings that kind of stick in your memory?
Yeah, so my highest score, 124, that was at the Malvern Festival, so... lots of county age group games go to Malvern. Can't remember what time of year, but it's sort of like a week-long camp and it's all really exciting. And yeah, I got 124, was really proud. Mum was scoring that day. And I remember, I think at the innings break, I ran off, I got my 100, ran to Mum at the scorer's table, gave her a big hug, said, Mum, I really want to get 200, and then hit a catch to a fielder and 124. So that's a fond memory. Yeah, and then in terms of bowling, there was a... I think we're in a quarter final, Bucks against Sussex, when I played for Bucks, and I managed to turn one sort of behind the batter's legs and bowl them, and that's just one ball that's stuck with me in terms of something that's quite special.
Your umpiring, how did that start? Where did that come from?
Yeah, so it started because when I was playing for Radlett Women Club Cricket, we didn't have umpires. So occasionally the dads would step in, and then eventually mum went, well, I'm going to do my course and umpire your games on a Sunday, and basically cancel out the match fees that she'd have to pay for me. And then I think after a year or two of doing that, she said, why don't you do it? And you can earn some pocket money. So at 16, I took my course in Sussex. And then I think the next year, mum and I did a couple of friendlies together. And then I eventually sort of properly picked it up when I went to Australia on a gap year. Did some umpiring in the Victorian Turf Cricket Association, which is sort of north and west Melbourne suburbs. And I found that the match fee would help pay for my food for the week.
And was that men's cricket you were umpiring in?
Yeah, men's cricket. It hadn't really crossed my mind to umpire women's cricket, I think, because I was playing. So the days just married up quite nicely. It was only when I sort of came back and then I ended up having a year out of university for health reasons, and sort of really picked up a lot of county age groups, schools, girls and women's cricket, and that was sort of where I started on that women and girls pathway.
Tell us a little bit more about the Australian experience. What was that like?
Oh, it was awesome. So I played for Melbourne Cricket Club for their second team, and we actually ended up winning the Premier flag that year, so that was pretty awesome. Amazing kind of atmosphere and culture that they have there. Every park you walk past has got some form of sport going on. It helps that it's nice and sunny and dry most of the time. And then the umpiring side of it, I was really fresh, new umpire, getting to learn my basics. I remember balls hit to the boundary, I'd sometimes forget to signal four. You know, kind of really early days of the umpiring, and they play two-day cricket there, but on two Saturdays. So it was a really bizarre experience. And you have to put your own stumps in when you arrive at the ground. So kind of relying on my colleague to have a mallet and a stump gauge, because I haven't packed that in my suitcase. But a lot of learnings from that, really enjoyed it. And actually the only behavioural issue I remember having was with an English player over on their sort of gap year to play for an Australian club. So that was quite entertaining.
Can you tell us a little bit about the pathway for umpires? You've mentioned that your mum took a course and then you took the same course. Tell us a bit about that, and then the progress that you have to make to get to the different levels of umpiring.
Yeah, so when I started, there wasn't the pathway that there is now, and it was basically had to make your way up through men's cricket in order to then sort of transfer across and do women's cricket. So thankfully, they've sort of redone the courses, and like you'll know, the new umpire course has now set you onto these two men's and women's pathways. I think it's a really clear structure now, and it shows that you can just do men's cricket, just do women's cricket, or mix and match a bit of both and sort of progress up both rungs of the ladder. But yeah, when I was starting out, it was Thames Valley League, and then your next step would be Home Counties League, and then you could maybe think about men's minor counties, as it was then, national counties now. And the women's pathway sort of just wasn't there. You could kind of do women's county cricket, but there wasn't that next step to sort of, I think it was the Kia Super League back then, regional cricket wise, that was more for the professional umpires team.
And where are you now on these kind of dual pathways?
Yeah, it's a good situation? Question. So I'm M2, so that's national panel, which is really exciting. Get to do some national counties, which I enjoy, and some men's second 11 county cricket. And then I made my Metro Bank One Day Cup debut last year. And then on the women's side, I'm a W1, which is your group of women's contracted umpires doing the women's professional domestic structure. And then I'm on the sort of separate from ECB on the ICC development panel, which allows me to do international cricket.
I hesitate to ask how old you are.
25.
Okay, that's quite a journey that you've been on.
Yeah.
You started at 16?
Yes, yes.
Can you say a little bit about who has inspired and helped you on that quite meteoric rise to where you are?
I think, it's been a really accelerated rise. And I think it's right to say that COVID and sort of the equality movement as well has really helped my career and its progression in terms of the introduction of the women's regional professional competition married up with the start of COVID, and they were looking for more women umpires and just sort of almost pushed us through, which was amazing for me. But sort of the inspirations, I mean, Sue Redfern, one of my best mates on field and someone I really looked up to. But now that I've sort of progressed as well, looking at those, so lucky to have Ian Gould as one of our coaches, Dennis Burns, who used to be an ex ICC elite coach, are real sort of support pillars for me. And then looking at some of my international colleagues, so Claire Polisak in Australia, I also talk to quite frequently, and members of the professional umpires team, which really opened us with welcome arms, actually.
Do you want to say a little bit more about your mum as well? Because she started you on the journey.
Yeah.
Has she been very important as an inspiration to...
Yeah, she got me on that sort of that first step. And I remember when I came back from Australia, I'd learned to drive, but we were sharing a car. So actually it turned out that we did most of our games umpiring together in the Thames Valley League. So picked up a lot of stuff from her, and, you know, some bits you agree with, some bits you don't. And we umpire in quite different ways. But what she's doing now is she's said, look, I don't really want to do men's league cricket. I'll do some women's umpiring. And she's really enjoying her visually impaired umpiring now. And she actually won the Umpire of the Year for the visually impaired last year. So she was, she loves it, and that was a pretty proud moment for me.
We'll come on to a little bit about your views on umpiring,
yeah,
and some of the issues in a bit. But you made history, 2021, part of the first all-female team to umpire an ECB-accredited Premier League game.
Yes.
Do you want to tell us a little bit about that moment, and
yeah,
the
that
day
was,
and...
that was awesome. So we'd been trying to do it the year before, and then obviously COVID struck, but Yvonne is someone that I've known for quite a few years now, and someone that I've stood with, someone who's been a bit of a mentor for me, and I crossed the bridge and went to Wepple, west of England, and having the media there on the day, you know, it was a bit sort of odd. The players were going, why have we got cameras here? And they were so great, actually. We're at Bedminster. Really good game, competitive game, lovely little ground, quite a few spectators around the outside, and just a really nice positive atmosphere, and some of the players going, well, why are we celebrating it? You know, this should have happened years ago, and that kind of shift in sort of attitudes towards women in cricket, really.
I want to ask you a little bit about this.
Yeah.
You're kind of coming into what has been historically a male preserve, if you like, the cricket club and the
yeah.
cricket pitch. Has that caused any difficulties or problems for you as you kind of developed or not?
I think I've been quite fortunate in terms of the experiences I've had. I've certainly heard anecdotes from other female umpires who've had some quite negative experiences. Generally, mine's been quite positive. I mean, I remember when I was playing, there was always sort of awkward things around sharing a changing room, for example, and some cricket clubs, their changing room, I remember one of them is you have to walk through the home dressing room to get to the umpire's changing room, so it just... some of that kind of logistics doesn't work out, but actually most of the clubs have been quite accommodating. I think also because I was quite young, that was probably the main thing that people were picking up on when I was coming to a game. But I think with players, showing them that you played and you really understand the game goes a long way. And I think kind of just explaining, you know, that I'd played county cricket, albeit not sort of men's professional county cricket or national counties, but sort of really understood the game and their frustrations and could work with the players went a long way. So I think I've been quite fortunate in that I haven't really had negative experiences, but I know there are definitely some of my colleagues who've, you know, have and still have some negative experiences.
Do you think that you're a trailblazer? Do you think you're setting the kind of pace for others that will come after? Does it feel like that, or do you just try and get on with the job?
Yeah, I think getting on with it is the main thing. I wouldn't necessarily see myself as a trailblazer. I think I've got a couple of mentees who are also young umpires, and they're saying, you know, I want to do what you've done, and then you just don't really think about what you're doing at the time. I don't go out to a game thinking, oh, I'm definitely going to go and inspire people. You just go out there thinking, I'm going to do my best on the field. And having spoken to a couple of the other umpires who I saw as role models, they said, well, I was a role model because I just went and did my job. I didn't do anything special. So I think just be the best umpire that I can be. If I help inspire even one person, that's great. But yeah, just focus on the job at hand.
You made your international debut in women's cricket umpiring aged 22. Can you tell us about that, the first time you umpired
yeah.
in the international game?
Yeah, that was amazing. I got the call from Chris Kelly at the time, and he said, I want you to be involved in this series. I'd done some fourth umpiring for the series before with India due to sort of illness. I'd been called up last minute, but this one... get the call, yep, want you to be involved, oh, and you're going to be on field for one of them. You're going, oh my goodness, this is amazing. Sort of just didn't really expect it, a sort of pinch yourself moment. Really fortunate that I had some lovely colleagues help get me through that. And fortunately, having grown up played against, played with a lot of the England players, it was sort of only one team that I felt I kind of had to prove myself to and earn the respect of. And thankfully it was New Zealand, who we all know are quite a nice bunch generally. And I remember walking out onto the field for my debut, Sophie Eccleston, who I was on the England under 15 squad with, she whispered, because we were by stump mic, she went, "Anna, congratulations, you know, really well done." And that was a really nice moment, actually, for that recognition. And Mum was super proud. She was there on the day. Friends sent me multiple pictures because I was suddenly on television, catching my sort of grumpy face that's the natural face I wear. But yeah, a real proud moment for me.
Have there been any other moments in your career to date that either you're really proud of or stick out quite clearly for you?
Yeah, so 100 debut. Can't remember what year now, but that was really special. First 100 game at Lord's with 14,000 people, really special. I mean, you know, Lord's is kind of technically, I guess, my local ground. It was straight along the Metropolitan line from Amersham. And I'd done some scoring there with young officials. But that was a really proud moment, and just in terms of the sort of the status of the venue. And then my T20 international debut was the opening match of the Women's World Cup, T20 World Cup. Which was pretty awesome. I remember telling Suze, "It's my international T20 debut." And she went, "Oh, you're joking." So no, it is. And calling play as well. I was really fortunate as play started from my end. So kind of calling play on the whole World Cup at Newlands, which is stunning, was a really, really big moment for me. Yeah.
Is that your photo on your Twitter? This
Ooh,
one
gosh.
Looks like Newlands. I'm not sure if it would be that. But...
Oh, do you know what? I can't remember. No. My cover photo is... the Lord's ODI against India with Jhulan Goswami on her farewell game.
Okay.
And I remember at the end of the game, shook hands with Jhulan and just went, "This is such an honour." She's so respectful on the field, loves her cricket, knows her cricket inside out, just a lovely, lovely person on the field. And I just said, "Thank you, what an honour." It's such an icon that I grew up watching. And that's a really lovely memory that I hold. My profile picture is, I think, me at some point during the World Cup. I don't know whether it's the opening game or not.
Okay. Let's talk about umpiring then.
Yeah.
And your philosophy and your ideas around it and a little bit more about it. Yeah. What is it in your mind when you go out to umpire? What are you thinking?
Well, first of all, it's, I think, reminding yourself, player's game. I'm there to facilitate. I'm there to have fun also. Just remind yourself that we do it because we love it. But also... I remember talking to some umpires who were doing an introduction umpire course, some young officials, and I said, like, "Who's scared of making a wrong decision?" And I think all of them put their hands up. And I said, "Well, what's our job as an umpire?" And they sort of looked a bit blankly. I said, "Is it to make decisions?" They were like, "Yeah." So I said, "So what's the only way you can fail as an umpire?" Sort of blank faces again. I said, "The only way you fail is if you don't make a decision." And that kind of mindset's really helped. Yes, no one wants to make loads of mistakes, players don't want you to make loads of mistakes, but I think that just kind of gives you that self-confidence and a little bit of, look, I'm making decisions, whether right or wrong I'll reflect, but actually I'm doing my job. And that really helped me move forwards in recreational cricket and then further on as the professional space. So yeah, look, I don't like being wrong, no one likes being wrong, but I think just mainly enjoying it. You've got great cricket, best view on the pitch, and yeah, I've seen some phenomenal players and I wouldn't change that for anything.
For most of us, when we're watching the game, it's the experience, it's the players that we're watching. For you as an umpire,
mm-hmm.
there's 101 other things going on when a game is going
yeah.
on. Can you kind of give us a sense of what it's like to have all... What are you doing when a bowler's coming into bowl? What's your thought process? What are you looking for? And then after a batsman's played a shot, what's next? Tell us about that.
Yeah, I think it's really important that we talk about this more, and different umpires have different triggers and routines. So mine is generally at the end of the ball, when it's gone dead, I'll breathe out and just sort of almost just say that ball's over. Nice little puff of out breath. Then I'll sort of switch down. I might look at my colleague. I might have a look in the crowd. I might, you know, listen to the crowd noise. Maybe have a little chat with a player, depending on who it is and if they want to chat. And then if it's a ground where I can hear the bowler running in, as soon as I hear the bowler's footsteps, sort of settle my feet, breathe out, breathe in, and then bring my hands together, and that's my sort of default phase, and I call it kind of getting into my bubble and just that heightened concentration. If you can't hear the bowler's feet running in, you've got to use different cues, but it might be the batter on their final sort of look up, might be the wicketkeeper's position. And just some really powerful routines around the consistency really helps you switch up and switch down your concentration. And I say again to some of the young umpires or players, you go, I'll never be able to do it, I can't concentrate for that long. And I go, well, can you concentrate for 30 seconds, 45 seconds? Oh, yeah. I said, well, okay, just do that, but 300 times. I'm not switched on for the whole 3 hours, by no means. But I think kind of putting it in that perspective really helps. You know, no player at square leg, for example, is concentrating 100% of the time. Yeah, there's been some real pinch me moments where you switch down and suddenly the crowd noise is so much more evident, or you're getting heckled from square leg umpire at the Aegeus after I'd fallen over. It's quite entertaining sometimes. But yeah, that's kind of my routine and thought process. And if there's a particular challenge with a bowler like Alana King, who gets a lot of drift, I might be going leg stump line just to make sure that I'm sure that the ball's pitched in line. You get to know your players.
Would it be fair to say that part of the game, the LBW,
mm-hmm.
it is the thing that maybe causes most anxiety amongst new umpires or people who are thinking of being umpires?
Yeah, I think so, because it's your opinion, it's your guess, if you will. I mean, even Hawkeye is a prediction. So I think as well it can be quite overwhelming when you first break it down, and the sort of the flow chart that you go through. I remember the flow chart I think I first got when I first started was about 4 or 5 different questions that you've got to ask yourself, and you think, oh, I've got to do all that in, you know, it's a split second decision. But actually, I think once you just kind of get used to it, tune into the bowler, you can really kind of get into your routines, learn the pitch. But yeah, definitely, it's when I first started, it was almost please hit it, please hit it, please hit it. And there's still some players where you think, oh, they've got such a big front pad. But yeah, you get more comfortable with it the more games you do.
Are you? I mean, you've talked about getting used to the bowler.
Mm-hmm.
After you've had, I don't know, an over or two overs of a particular bowler, it may be one that you know well, it may be one that you don't know. But are you kind of setting the parameters, thinking, what is this bowler doing? What does that mean for an LBW shout? What are they going to have to be doing to be successful? Is that how it works?
Yeah, it's kind of sort of tuning in. So you go from a really wide of a lot of unknown. I'm not sure what they're going to do. I'm not sure what the carry and the seam movement's going to do. I'm not sure if they're swinging it. And then by the end of one over, two overs, three overs, you can sort of go, okay, that's generally the idea of what they're doing. Sort of narrow that, kind of reduce the amount of uncertainty. But I mean, still it's ball by ball. You know, they might suddenly bowl a full toss that wraps them on the pads and could be hitting the stumps. And yeah, there's always a bit of unknown in cricket, but it's about just trying to reduce that really, and kind of tune into what you think the bowler's doing, what the bowler is doing.
I'm perhaps drawing away a little bit now. The laws of the game, how useful are they for you in terms of guiding your actions and decisions in a particular game? Is everything that you've ever seen on a cricket pitch covered by the laws, or do you sometimes have to kind of go with your intuition or your best guess?
Yeah, so there's 42 laws, really important in terms of the structure and the sort of the strict guidance of the game and that kind of the chassis, if you will. But never forget law 43, the unwritten sort of common sense law, which often comes into play quite a lot in terms of particularly player management or pitch conditions, ground weather, light. Obviously we operate within law, but where we can, we're trying to find ways to maximise play and kind of prevent problems before they start. So you need to know your laws, but yeah, like I say, don't ever forget 43, the unwritten one.
You mentioned earlier that game at Lord's, England against India.
Mm-hmm.
It ended quite controversially with the running out of one of the England batsmen at the bowler's end.
Yeah.
Can you just say what it was like as an umpire to be mm-hmm. on the field when that incident occurred? How did you feel about it, and how did you respond along with your colleague?
Yeah, I mean, I think feeling didn't really come into it because you're so in the zone and you're just focused on doing your job. I was stood at square leg. Martin Saggers was my colleague at bowler's end. So I've seen it unfold. We've come together. All I've said to Martin is, did you call dead ball before the wickets were broken? He said no. Cool. Send it upstairs to Mike Burns, who was TV umpire that game. Collected the ball, sort of had a bit of a chat with Martin, kind of going over the laws, really. You know, did she get past the expected point of release? Charlie Dean was the batter who was eventually run out of bowlers and Freya Davies at the other end. And the England had come from a position where they really shouldn't have had any chance of winning, I'll be honest. And they come to this point where actually it was really getting quite exciting, building to a climax. India were looking a bit worried. Freya and Charlie are sort of in the middle of the wicket and they're going, Anna, she can't, she's, you know, she's gone through a delivery stride. She can't run me out. And you're kind of trying to go through law whilst also Mike Burns' voice is doing exactly the same through the speakers. And yeah, look, Charlie was, I mean, quite understandably upset. Had the chance, you know, they were doing really well, almost winning it for their country. I think the most disappointing thing, and I'll use that word, is it was Jilanga Swamy's final game. And she's being carried around on the shoulders of her teammate, this stalwart of Indian cricket, a role model for thousands, if not millions. And there were just boos ringing around Lords. And it was, that was probably the most uncomfortable that I felt. People have their opinions on run out of the non-striker's end. Look, we go by law. I personally don't have an issue with it. It's within law. Batter was consistently leaving her ground. People will fall either side of it, spirit of cricket, etc. But yeah, definitely the most uncomfortable thing was the kind of the atmosphere at Lords at the end. It should have been this last great hurrah for Jolan, and unfortunately it wasn't sort of the cheers and applause that I think would have really rounded off what was an amazing career.
To counter that, can you tell me about a game or a moment where, for you, perhaps because you haven't been involved, but you're on the pitch, you're watching a match that's given you that real buzz and real excitement and thought, well, this is cricket, this is what it's all about?
Yeah, well, there's a few that stick out, but probably the Ashes Test match. It wasn't, you know, the year before I'd sort of had a, you know, quotation marks, 100% test. Hadn't had any returns. That was England-South Africa at Taunton. Come around to 2023. First ever Ashes series. It's really special, obviously, because normally it's, well, for men's cricket, it's neutral umpires. So English umpires don't tend to get to be involved in an Ashes series. But standing with Sue on field, obviously Jasmine, TV umpire, and Sophie McClelland making her fourth umpire debut. Really special team to be a part of. And, you know, we had some amazing cricket. Sophie Eccleston's bowling, the real challenge that she gave me at my end. Ash Gardner's bowling from, luckily, Sue's end. Amazing performances from Annabelle Sutherland. Elise Perry getting 99 and being caught up gully. Seeing Lauren Filer running in and reaching speeds that we hadn't seen before. Beth Mooney, class as always. Elisa Healy making me laugh. And Alana King making me laugh quite a lot during sometimes what were, you know, quite high-pressure moments. And obviously Tammy's really special innings. So I think any game where women are wearing white, a test match, is really special because they don't come around that often. The privilege being able to wear my white coat out on the field, and the crowds at Trent Bridge were phenomenal. So yeah, that holds a lot of different memories, positive and a couple of negative with a few overturns, but overall a really, really positive experience.
This is a little question for me now. My memories of umpiring were grabbing an old white coat from the changing room and hopefully finding six pebbles in the pocket to go out. Tell me about what you take onto the pitch with you now as an umpire.
Yeah, so I'm a member of the clicker side. So I would drop pebbles or marbles or rocks or whatever. So I use a clicker. I have a little cheat sheet, which is about A6 size of the most important regs that I need to remember. Especially in recreational cricket, you can have about 5 different sets of regs across 2 weeks if you're doing lots of umpiring. Have my bowler's card, overs card. I like to carry the team sheet if they have one or if they give you one. Always got a spare clicker on me because I've forgotten that before. I've taken a jacket off and the clicker's gone with it. There's nothing more embarrassing than counting with your fingers or asking a fielder to run it on. A couple of different coloured pens. Black one for the boring stuff and then pink one for the timings and things, just so it stands out a bit easier. Sometimes start of season or end of season, pair of gloves just in case. Ball gauge, spare bail, and then I always have a couple of sweets on me just to help keep the concentration going throughout.
I've read somewhere that you've got a bit of a reputation as the snack
Yes.
The snacker, is that right?
Yeah, that is right. So I think it would be quite ironic if I'd done a nutrition talk at any point. But yeah, it sort of started around that South Africa test match. And just because I hadn't really done much multi-day cricket, and just the importance of keeping sort of your nutrition going, your hydration going. Had a lot of snacks there for the team, not just for me. But yeah, I'll always have something to munch on, whether it be a banana or sort of like a nut bar. Carry that on me, or like I say, sweets. Sometimes you just need that sugar burst, especially in that kind of period after tea, sort of about an hour after tea, where you might be starting to feel a bit sleepy from the food. But yeah, you know, I'm normally one to turn to if you need something to eat.
Umpiring, the image of umpiring, is it a good one? Do you think it needs changing? Do you think it needs updating? Do you think we need to think of umpiring in a different way to the way it's been looked at?
I mean, well, when I was growing up, it was always sort of a more elderly white gentleman, like you say, in the long white coat. And I think we're seeing actually a lot of new umpires, young umpires, female umpires, but still, you know, a good amount of ex-players who might be that little bit older involved in the game. And I think umpiring is mainly sort of a recreational level, as you don't do it for the money. So I think it's really important that we encourage anyone who wants to be involved in umpiring. Obviously, there's been a big push to get more women and then younger people involved, which I think is fantastic, and giving them that opportunity, but also reminding people they don't have to sacrifice their playing to umpire and they can balance. So yeah, moving forwards, obviously I'd love to see more women performing at the higher level, and the professional umpires team, they've got Sue involved, which is fantastic, first fully professional female umpire. Love to see hopefully some more make that step over the next 5 or so years. But I think it's really changing for the better. Obviously, with the ICEC report that came out, it was quite damning in some of its findings. Cricket's faced some hard truths, but I think the way it's moving is a really positive direction. But we can't forget the volunteer base that helped get us, you know, sort of for, I don't know, the past 50, 60, 70 years in terms of filling the umpire numbers as well.
We've gone a long way through this chat without me mentioning Wales. You've mentioned it. Can you tell us how you came to Wales? What's the connection with Wales?
Yeah, so as you can probably tell from my accent, I'm not Welsh myself. Well, depending if I'm seeing a patient in the from the valleys, I might have a bit more of a twinge to my accent. But I came to Cardiff in 2017 for university. I'm still at Cardiff University doing medicine. So I've lived in Cardiff now for, what would that be, about 6 or 7 years. Really love it here. Got involved with Welsh cricket probably soon after I joined and came to Cardiff, and then sort of finished my career with Wales in 2021. But I still try and occasionally turn out for Radda Cricket Club in Cardiff. Started doing some of the South Wales Prem as well, which was my first experience of Premier League cricket. I was really fortunate when I moved over that Wyn Morgan, who was the County Development Officer, I'd known him from some regional tournaments that we'd done, and he helped me develop my umpiring and get my sort of first step on a Premier panel. Really grateful to Wales ACO for taking me under their wing and giving me some great opportunities, and I wish I could do more, but I just, my weekends are now filled with the women's professional game. But fantastic setup here in Wales.
How do you manage to balance studying, umpiring and playing? Do you still play, or?
Yeah, so playing's taken a bit of a backseat, sadly. I mean, I think I managed 2, maybe 3 games last year, just purely for the enjoyment perspective now. But yeah, so up until my 3rd year of university, I was full-time student, and I think I maxed out the sort of number of days you can take off at university before you have to retake the year in order to do some internationals and umpiring a bit. So I went part-time in my 4th year. So it means that I split my year across 2. So instead of doing, I think it's 48 weeks a year, I do 24 weeks a year. So full-time hours, but part of the year. And it just allows me the flexibility to fit cricket in. So without going part-time, without the support of Cardiff University and its high-performance programme, I wouldn't have been able to go to the World Cup. I wouldn't have been able to go to Fairbreak in Hong Kong. I wouldn't be able to do the volume of cricket that I do in summer. So really grateful to them. I know they've supported a lot of other athletes, you know, Jamie Roberts for one, the rugby player. But yeah, it was really, really fortunate that they sort of looked at my officiating at the international level and also gave me the equal opportunity to have that flexibility.
The future, do you think much about kind of where you're heading, or Do you have any targets or goals?
Yeah, it's a difficult one. So I keep saying it's future Anna's problem, and eventually it's going to become present day Anna's problem. Obviously, I'm going to finish my degree, hopefully become Dr. Harris, which would be pretty cool, and continue to umpire as much as I can. Whether that, you know, fits in terms of joining the NHS and its workforce, I mean, it has less flexibility than university, but I think I'll just have to sort of see where my umpiring's headed, see where my sort of doctoring career's headed, and bend and flex as much as I can where I can.
And if you had a chance to sell umpiring to somebody, what would you say to them? What would be the kind of the key message that you'd want them to kind of think about umpiring?
I mean, I think all umpires have a love of the game. I think that's taken as a given. The main selling point of umpiring is best seat. No one else has that view from 24 yards away, and be that involved, and you really see the tactics come to play from both sides, the batters and what they're talking about in the middle of the wicket, the bowlers, the captain, what they're trying to do. You and your colleague are sort of a team of two, not against the other 22 players, but just to sort of facilitate and really watch some pretty cool competition going on, whether that be sort of your local friendly game or a touring side, junior cricket, and seeing how they develop across different games and the chaos of junior cricket sometimes, or whether that be into Premier League and more professional cricket. So, yeah, that's really how I'd sell it. Best place on the pitch.
And Wales, do you hope to have a future in Wales? Would you like to stay?
Yeah, I love Wales. I've been fortunate as part of my degree that we do placements all across Wales. So I've been to North Wales a couple of times, been out to West Wales as well. It's gorgeous, the people are nice. So I do want to stay, hopefully, in Wales. Mum would love me to move home and live a bit closer to her, but I think Wales is currently where my sights are set. I just love Cardiff, and you know, it's a really, really nice capital city. It's small enough to not feel lost, but it's got enough going on. You can be in the mountains in sort of half an hour. You can be at the beach in half an hour. I mean, it's a pretty special place.
Sounds like you could do an advert for the Wales Tourist Board.
Yeah, definitely.
Anna, thank you for giving me your time today. It's been lovely listening to you talk.
No pleasure. Thank you very much.
Many thanks to Anna for giving up her time, and best wishes to her for the upcoming season. Now, whilst watching Sam Northeast making history at Lords last weekend, I did find some time to meet and interview the head of Heritage and Collections at the MCC, Neil Robinson. Next week, I'll bring you the first of two episodes featuring Neil. So do join us again when we'll be hearing some more stories about the great game of cricket in the great country of Wales. Hwyl fawr, bye for now.
Oes gyda chi stori i'w rhannu gyda ni? Mae croeso i chi gysylltu. E-bostiwch mwcpod1921@gmail.com neu ewch i'n tudalen Facebook, Museum of Welsh Cricket Podcast, neu i'n tudalen Twitter, @WelshCricketPod. Do you have a story you'd like to share with us? If so, please contact email mwcpod1921@gmail.com or go to our Facebook page, Museum of Welsh Cricket Podcast, or our Twitter, @WelshCricketPod.